spiritual principles, knitting, and the politics of ethical behavior. Episode 11, Reciprocity. Today, we'll discuss reciprocity, the what comes around goes around principle. We'll talk about knitting cables and knitting love knots into our work. I'll tell you about a professor who changed my life and then didn't remember me. I'll share some sweet feedback from you listeners. And of course, there's a surprise ending. The principle of reciprocity is a little bit of a tricky one, so follow me closely. First, reciprocity is the what comes around goes around principle. It's about balance. It's sort of karmic. But it's not a balance or a karma that we have to create. It's a force, a dynamic, a spiritual influence, a cosmic seesaw, if you will, that already exists and operates. We simply have to become aware of it if we want to understand and be conscious of how our actions create our experience, both in the present and in the future. Secondly, reciprocity is a reactive principle. It's what Newton was talking about when he said, "For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction." Now, I do know that some people interpret this statement to mean that every time we do something nice, someone else does something bad to balance it. So why bother doing the nice thing in the first place? Or worse, every time I do something mean, it's because it's required that I balance something nice that someone else did. That's ridiculous, of course, but it's an example of how masterful we humans are at justifying our misbehavior, our inappropriate actions. And it's also a massive misinterpretation of what Newton was talking about. In The Invisible Garment, I discuss that when we touch something or when we see something, there is an exchange of energy between us and that something. We touch a plant, let's say a tree, and in a sense, it touches us back. There's a resistance. There is an exchange between us. We look at a flower, and in a sense, it looks back, i.e. the light reflected off the plant touches our eyes. All right, that's a little esoteric, so let's look at another example. Newton was trying to explain the laws of physics, so let's talk about physics. So let's say you hang up a shirt in your closet. There are two equal and opposite actions taking place. One is that the rod that the hanger hangs on is creating an energetic dynamic that holds the shirt up off the ground. The other is that gravity is pulling the shirt down toward the ground. So, between the gravity and the equal and opposite energy of the rod, the shirt stays very still in your closet. There. You see, reciprocity is at work in your closet. Pretty exciting stuff, huh? But third, there is a deeper question that we want to discuss. The physicist might be interested in what happens when we hang up our shirt, but the spiritual practitioner is more interested in what caused the idea of shirt or hanger or closet. What is the creative force that urges us to develop ideas and concepts and things? And of course, every mother wonders why this particular idea, this particular urge to hang up your shirt, seems to pause for about 10 years in the teenagers. But since no one, not even God, can explain teenagers, let's get back on topic. I'm suggesting that the principle of reciprocity runs through every expression of life. Each being becomes a unique configuration through which life force can express itself, and the principle of reciprocity serves as a never-ending flow of encouragement. Each of us senses that the gift of life, indeed the purpose of life, is the opportunity to create actions and reactions, to experience the flow of life's energy by allowing it to express through us. So there. Now you know the meaning of life. Since you may be listening to this just after I record it, or you may be listening to it much later into the future, I need to explain this next part. Just about a week ago, there was a 7.0 earthquake epicentered near Haiti. The devastation there is so horrific that the eyes of the world are turned that direction as we watch rescue and help organizations try to assist in a situation that almost renders help impossible. It's hard to get the equipment there. It's hard to get the supplies there. In order to start really cleaning up the city of Port-au-Prince, they need bulldozers and cranes and heavy equipment. But Haiti is so poor that they don't have the needed equipment, which means it needs to be shipped in. But the port is gone, which means it needs to be airlifted in. Some of the equipment is too heavy to be airlifted in. And in addition to that, they're so busy trying to figure out how to airlift medical supplies and food through their very, very small airport. It's just a frustrating, complex situation. It will be months before Haiti is even ready to start being rebuilt. It will be years before Haiti is restored. This is an example of how natural disaster is more catastrophic to poverty-stricken areas than to other areas. We had a 6.5 earthquake in Northern California recently that did negligible damage because our building codes and the ability to respond immediately to emergency is so much higher here. It's about money. So yes, on one hand, reciprocity means this happens and then that happens as a result. That's the kind of karmic way of looking at an event. And in some cases, that approach is helpful. However, it's silly and superficial to pretend that we know what causes something like a flood or an earthquake. In spite of what Reverend Pat Robertson may have told you, New Orleans was not flooded because there are too many gays and sinners living there, and Haiti was not devastated because they made a pact with the devil when they liberated themselves from France. The balancing aspect of reciprocity was at work in this earthquake. It wasn't that the earthquake epicentered there to destroy Haiti. It was there because at this time, that's where the Earth's pressure were so great that they had to be eased. Humans can't predict that kind of activity because we're not smart enough. We aren't conscious enough. We're not tuned in yet to the Earth's morphic fields. Reciprocity is the force that measures and arbitrates the push and pull between opposing energies. It's an ongoing dance. The earthquake was a release of opposing Earth energies. Now, the human tragedy is calling for a compassionate, philanthropic response from the rest of the world, which in a sense releases some of the energies that are making us create war and fight against each other and kill each other. What appears to have been a random event can also be seen as an opportunity to understand the principle of reciprocity more thoroughly. Okay, so let's talk about knitting. Actually, knitting is an obvious outpicturing of the principle of reciprocity. You have a plan, you do something, and it creates a response. Okay, so let's say, for example, you have a pattern that you're going to knit. Let's say it's a cable pattern for a sweater. And let's say there's one large cable that goes right up the center of the front of the sweater, and that repeats every 24 rows. So again, then let's say there's another shorter repeating pattern that repeats every 8 rows, which creates an intricate little cable strip on either side of the larger cable in the middle. Okay, just in case you don't know what I'm talking about. Cables are those things where the knitting flip-flops on itself. It creates the look of kind of a rope running up the middle of your sweater or running, you know, through your design. The way you actually create the cable is to take a few stitches off, knit the adjacent stitches, put those stitches back on and knit those. And so you've actually crisscrossed your knitting. and it creates this little spirally look on your fabric. All right, so you have this pattern, and it's creating a big spirally look up the center of your sweater and two little smaller, more intricate spirally looks on either side of that. Here are the things you know about that pattern. First, everyone that knows how to cable knows that you purl the stitches on either side of that spiral of the cable so that this twisty thing actually bumps out and it kind of stands out on your fabric. Then you know that every time you take the stitches off and knit the stitches adjacent to the drop stitches, and then you pick up the drop stitches and knit them, you've created this marvelous little crisscrossy pattern that makes your fabric fun and interesting. And you know that if you pick up the drop stitches in front of the knitted adjacent stitches, you will create a clockwise looking spiral cable. Whereas if you pick them up on the back side of the adjacent stitches, you will create a counterclockwise looking spiral. I'm going to put a link on the podcast notes for a cool little video about cables so you can see what I mean. But that's basic reciprocity in knitting. It's an action that creates a result or a reaction. And the reaction that it creates is this interesting little sort of figure eight, you know, sort of infinity spiral thing, which the infinity spiral is a symbol of reciprocity. If you think about the infinity symbol, it's a, you know, it's a figure eight lying down. Something happens on this side and then it gets mirrored on that side, and then it comes back on this side and then it mirrors on that side. And so that's really kind of what a cable looks like. You've woven reciprocity into your fabric when you create a cable. Then there's one other thing that you know about this cable pattern. The 8 round repeat on either side of the sweater front, meaning that you make one of those little crisscross cable thingies every 8 rounds, should show up 3 times as often as the 24 round repeat in the center. So every time you start the 24 round pattern repeat anew for the middle larger cable, you should also be starting the 8 round repeat anew. If you made a mistake somewhere along the way on either of the pattern repeats, you'll know it right then, right there. Every 24 rounds, there's a built-in checkpoint to see if you're on target with your pattern. So again, reciprocity speaks real loud right then, right there. You can tell that I'm speaking from experience, right? So if you have made a mistake, then and there you need to correct it, or your sweater's going to look goofy. And how do you correct it? You correct it by frogging or tinking. All right, for those of you who don't know what frogging and tinking are, frogging means unraveling. You just take the needles out of your beautiful, fabulous, labor-intensive fabric and pull on the thread, ripping out your work until you reach the source of your error. Then you carefully stick those needles back into every single little stitch, and you say to yourself with a very positive attitude, okay, let's try that again. Why is it called frogging? Because that's what frogs say. Rip it. Rip it. Isn't that cute? I learned that on the internet. That's the power of the Google. Tinking means you unknit. If you are fortunate enough to have discovered your error shortly after making it, you can, one stitch at a time, move backward through your work and reach the flaw and correct it and then start to move forward again. Tinking is much safer than frogging because it doesn't require that you drop stitches. Picking up ripped out stitches can sometimes be tedious depending on the quality of your yarn. But tinking back 3 or 4 inches can take a lifetime. So you frog if you have to go back several inches in your work. You tink if you don't have to go back very far at all in your work. Tink, by the way, is knit spelled backwards. Isn't that cute? Ditto the Google thing. Now here's the trick. Usually we don't get frogging or tinking options in our other daily activities, which is why it is so important to understand the principle of reciprocity. One must learn to be quite conscious and intentional in every here and now moment, because don't kid yourself, it matters what you think and what you do. Okay, another quick digression. Did you know that there are iPhone apps to help you keep track of your knitting pattern repeats? Yes, yes, yes. There are iPhone apps, knitting iPhone apps. There's an app for that. I couldn't believe it when I found it. I'm really looking forward to the time when Steve Jobs or someone like him creates an app that will just show up and say, been there, done that. It reminds me not to reproduce 100 times a pattern in my psychological behavior that doesn't work. Anyway, back to the topic. Here's a most important question that I want you to pose to yourself regarding knitting and reciprocity. It's not whether you're being careful with your pattern repeats. It's not whether you're following the heel turn instructions on your sock. It's not whether you've learned to tuck your loose ends in so that they're virtually invisible. It's this. What is causing you to want to knit in the first place? Where is cause when we're talking about reciprocity and this urge to create? We know that turning a cable will cause the effect of a certain look on the front of a sweater. But what is the cause of wanting to pick up the pointy sticks in the first place? I'm suggesting that reciprocity is a spiritual energy that flows through life and delivers cause to your life. I'm suggesting that because you have received, you are driven to give. You recognize on some level that life is all about delivering your unique gift from the soul to the world, and that somehow the desire to deliver that gift is at cause in making you want to do anything, whether it's knitting or painting or just smiling at the sales clerk or looking a homeless person in the eye. Reciprocity influences your actions and pushes you to start the cycle that demands a result and a reaction. All right, that takes us directly to the politics of ethical behavior and what your ethics would look like if reciprocity were the principle influencing your decisions. Now, as you probably know, this body of spiritual work that I teach, which I call the Invisible Garment, posits that each of us is born with a certain number of spiritual influences that swaddle us and that we wear as an invisible garment throughout our lives. One of those principles guides our ethical decisions. Now, when we get to this segment, I always feel the need to redefine politics for you so that you don't get it confused with the holy congressional mess that's being reflected into our homes via cable news. No, I'm not talking about that kind of power-grubbing, party-lining, lie-promoting, soul-selling politics. I'm speaking of the pure definition of the word politics, which is sensible and judicious action based on the known circumstances. I'm suggesting that one of the principles about which I'm podcasting influences your decision-making process, so that for the most part, and barring some kind of obtuse distortion in your own psychological structure, you make decisions influenced by spirit that you consider to be sensible and judicious based on the known circumstances. Every person's ethical body is unique, which is why not all people come to the same conclusion about what is sensible and judicious. In fact, even identical twins don't always approach their decision-making process identically. But today, we're discussing what it might look like if reciprocity were the principle that influenced your ethical choices. A long, 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 long time ago, in fact, sometime in the last millennium, I was in undergraduate school at a small liberal arts university in Abilene, Texas. At that time, the term liberal was still alive and well, even in Texas. And in fact, this little school had on its faculty some of the most open-minded, thought-provoking, critical thinkers I've ever met. I was fortunate enough during my freshman year to take a class from one of them, Dr. Robert Monk. Dr. Monk was in the religion department at the time, and he offered a course on ethics, and I thought, that sounded interesting, so I signed up. It turned out that this was one of those courses, and he was one of those teachers that completely turned my life upside down. Prior to this course, I firmly believed in right and wrong. There was a Christian way, which was the right way, to make decisions, and then there was every other way, which was the wrong way. This class that Dr. Monk taught was basically a semester of his presenting dilemmas to us and asking us to discuss and write about the best way to make a decision, given the circumstances of the presented situation. And I became literally obsessed with moral crisis, cultural dilemma, and the politics of ethical behavior. What are you to do when you find out that you're wrong about right and wrong? It changed my life. That class opened my eyes, opened my heart, changed my life. I joined the debate team so that I could more thoroughly investigate two sides of a dilemma, and I began a lifelong process of trying to understand the ethics of decision-making in this complex, dilemma-filled world. Digression. Just a few years ago, I saw Dr. Monk at a college reunion. I told him what a difference that class had made in my life, and that, in fact, it was the echoes of that class that sent me to graduate school many years later to get my doctorate of ministry. And he looked at me with sort of unrecognizing eyes. I'm thinking he didn't remember me. I'm thinking he didn't remember my taking that class. He didn't remember what an outstanding student I was. Whatever. Anyway, guess what? Almost 20 years later, I learned that my ethical principle is reciprocity. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, my book, The Invisible Garment, gives you a formula for figuring out which principles influence you in what way. Or you can go to the website, www.turtledreamers.com, and click on the Invisible Garment icon. And there you can download a chart that will tell you how to figure out what principles apply directly to your life. The fact that reciprocity is my ethical principle explains to me why I was so turned on by my freshman ethics course and why I've spent my life studying cause and effect, trying to understand the effect of my itty-bitty little decisions on the world. Here's an example. In the year 2000, the first hybrid Prius came out. As soon as I learned that there was going to be such a car, I insisted that we had to have one, and I dragged my husband down to the nearest Toyota dealership to order one. The salesman told me that I would receive the third Prius delivered in Southern California. That Leonardo DiCaprio, name dropping, had been in the day before to order one for himself and one for his mother. Isn't that sweet, buying a Prius for your mother? Anyway, I was excited. Did I think that my buying a Prius was going to change the world? No. But I did think that by making a decision to put my money into a purchase that made such a statement was important. When I got that first Prius, people would stop on the street and stare as I drove by, as if I were some kind of oddity. I pretended that they thought I was Leo DiCaprio's mother. Anyway, now, just a decade later, when I park my much newer Prius in a parking garage in Beverly Hills, it looks like a Prius commercial. Half the cars there are Prii. Now, here's what I'm saying. Earlier in this podcast, I suggested that knowing that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction could be a way to twist it and release you from any and all accountability for your decisions. But what I'm really saying is just the opposite. Reciprocity, the spiritual guarantee that what comes around goes around. The moral promise that your choices do matter gives you ultimate authority. Did my purchase of the third Prius sold in Southern California make a difference? Yes. I don't know how big, but I do know that every time I make the decision to purchase something, I'm making a decision to support the idea behind that something, to support the people who made that something, to support the government that protects or abuses the people who made that something, to support the CEO who stands to become a billionaire because I bought that something. Reciprocity gives you power. Reciprocity gives power to your choices. Reciprocity guarantees reaction. I got lots of feedback from my listeners while I was not podcasting. Many of you wrote in and urged me to do another podcast, which I appreciate. I did take a little bit of a break during the holidays. One of the letters that I got was really sweet. It was from a woman who had started knitting because she was listening to my podcast. And she said she finds it easy to knit while listening to the podcast because it feels like she's placing these principles into the stitches. And I love that. I realize that that's what I do too. Especially when I'm knitting for someone I love, when I'm knitting the socks and ties and hats and gloves and sweaters and scarves that my children are going to wear, every stitch has love in it and admiration and hope for their future. So I'm encouraging you to knit while you're listening to these podcasts or while you're thinking about these principles, and give those articles away knowing that they have a secret formula embedded in them, a formula for happiness. Thanks as always to Kevin Brennan for the music. I encourage you to go to his website, www.fboo.com. That's F as in Frank, boo as in boo-boo. Kevin is so creative and brilliant, and he's always creating something new for you to listen to, so check it out. And also go to our website, www.turtledreamers.com, to find out more about our work. And while you're there, be sure and contribute to the dreaming conversation. Just click on the free dream space, and there's an open forum there where people are posting their dreams and sharing their opinions about each other's dreams, and it's really fun. You can access the newsletters about these principles from turtledreamers.com from the homepage, but I also put a link to every corresponding newsletter on the podcast notes, so you can check it out from there too. Now, I've changed the podcast notes situation a little bit. If you go to Turtle Dreamers, the homepage, and click on podcasts, which is on the upper right-hand corner, it will take you to a menu page, and you can click on any one of the podcasts, and I've created a comments section. So it's kind of like a blog where you can listen to the podcast and then you can comment. And I would love for you to do that, starting with this one. And then maybe go back and listen to some of the ones you've either missed or listened to before and make comments. I would love to see us get a conversation, an international conversation going about these principles. Now, before the closing surprise, I just want to say this one thing. I have had so much trouble with this podcast. Every time I've tried to record it, something bizarre has happened. One time I recorded it and then I played it back and it sounded like a freight train was running through my living room while I recorded it. And one time I was in the middle of recording it and a whole herd of people suddenly tromped through my house. And yesterday I tried to record it and it recorded half and then the second half just wasn't there. I don't know what has been the problem, but this is like the seventh time I've tried to record this podcast. Now, I know that I said earlier that I don't believe that the Haitian people made a pact with the devil, because I don't really believe there's a devil to make a pact with. Except I think there might be a computer devil. I think my little MacBook has made a pact with the devil. They don't want this information about reciprocity to get out. They don't want you to be empowered by knowing about the principle of reciprocity. Okay, maybe I'm over the top. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but whatever. Hopefully, this time. And now for the closing surprise. As always, I found this group on the podsafemusic.com website. I love this group. They are called the Red Plastic Buddha. That in itself is enough to love. But this song, which is so perfect for the principle of reciprocity, is called Roller Coaster.
Someone somewhere some time ago, his eyes were clear to see. He put his thoughts into my mind and gave myself to me. He stopped me from living so insane. I could be just what I wanna be. Things appear as they really are. I can see. What I wanna see. Come on.
next time, sweet dreams.